Hey, you there? Ah, okay, cool. I got a thing to tell you. You listening? Awesome. All right. We are having a party. Yeah, you heard that right. We're having a party in Las Vegas during Interop at the Centrifuge Lounge on May 15th. At that party, you can hang out with me, Greg, and Drew, and it's all courtesy of Aptella, that cool SD-WAN company you've heard about on Packet Pushers many times before. So register, and then on May 15th, show up in your very best Vegas party wear. You know, we're going to have pants on. That's about all I can promise from us. Anyway, register at viptela.com/centrifuge. One more time, that's viptela.com/centrifuge. And I hope that we will see you there. This week's show is sponsored by Interop ITX, the only independent conference for technology leaders. Get a year's worth of objective IT education in 1 week. Visit Interop ITX and use promo code PACKETPUSHERS for a 20% discount.
Is this where we start?
This is where we start. This is the beginning. So we should tell people that this is the Packet Pushers and this is an Ethan and Greg show. That's what we should say now at this point.
Okay. So everybody, this is Greg and Ethan from the Packet Pushers, and it's an Ethan and Greg show.
Yes. Yes. You nailed it. You got it, buddy. We're going to get good at this.
Did you feel the passion there when I said that?
I felt it. I felt it. I mean, very faintly, if I'm honest, but yeah, I felt it. So, hey everyone, this edition of the Packet Pushers podcast is Ethan and Greg doing AMA stuff. So if you didn't know, at packetpushers.net, if you click on one of the toolbars, is an AMA, ask us anything link. It's real simple. Put in your first name, your question, and then we'll do a show about it. And we spammed this about on Twitter and the IRC channel and so on, and a bunch of you responded. So here we are to discuss your questions. And question number one,
Hang on. Before we get started, I just want to warn people.
We need to have this discussion, don't we?
We need to tell people in advance, because last time we changed the RSS feeds, everything got all balked. We had massive pain, and everybody had pain, and lots of people had to resubscribe. So what we're going to be doing for the next few weeks is telling you all that we're going to be making some changes to our RSS feeds. Fingers crossed the changes that we made last time are a one-off, and you won't notice the difference. But it is possible there'll be some disruption to your feed. So if something happens and you see that we're not there, you'll just have to go and resubscribe, because RSS feeds are just they are the RIP routing protocol of the internet world, I swear.
The whole thing is that it's broken. Some of our feeds are broken for Android users, which is a diminishingly small percentage of you, but there's enough people there that's like, we really want to get this fixed. So,
yes.
And our current RSS provider doesn't care to help us, is the bottom line. So
they just said it works for most people. It's not us.
We're testing with a new provider.
Sounds like the Cisco tech. No, nobody else is having problems like that. Why is it just you?
And in fairness, their feeds do check out on RSS Validator. It's not like the feeds, so we don't know. But anyway, we're starting to test with a new provider and having good results so far. And hopefully, through the magic of DNS, as Greg said, none of you are going to know the difference. But if you do, it's probably going to be something like, why are 50 episodes downloading? I hate you guys. Why do you do this?
All of a sudden you've got, and that's why, is because when we change the RSS, your podcatcher provider, you may change the RSS ID. It depends on a few things. One is the RSS feed provider. We use a separate provider. We don't just use WordPress for that. And so the provider may recalculate the RSS, may change, reformat the feed, and that means then your podcatcher may or may not. So suddenly see that as a new podcast, in which case you may suddenly be stuck downloading the last 50 or so shows, for which we apologize in advance. There's not much we can do about it. It's happens on a podcatcher by podcatcher. So last time we did this, iTunes saw everything as new, but other podcatchers like Overcast didn't.
So anyway, this is coming. All right. So Gordon asks, do companies hire sub average people in ID departments over smart people? As well as the cost aspect, smart people get angry and frustrated at bureaucratic and hindering governance processes, making waves of management, and then highlight the inadequacy of the system. And so sub-average workers are going to shrug their shoulders and accept all this as normal and happily go on with their day. So interesting question, Gordon. And my take is that I have not seen this, but I have seen companies choked by bureaucracy or offering uncompetitive compensation. They just tend to attract weak candidates. So in other words, I don't see them going after those kind of people on purpose. We want people that are going to be slaves and not rock the boat and not think and just do what we tell them and shut up about it. I haven't seen that, but I just have seen companies that are just miserable places to work because of those things. Just don't attract the best people. They attract weak people. Hmm. So what's your take, Greg?
I don't think companies set out to hire sub-average people in IT department. Like they don't, they obviously think they're hiring the best. I do work with organizations whose only option is to hire people to a certain price point. So if you're only paying half the national average for an IT person, guess what you get? Half the national average.
So, right.
Yes, it can be challenging. I suspect it's not so much that they hire people. What happens is the people who aren't very good or not very talented or not very motivated, or maybe they're going through a difficult period of their life, or you know, maybe there's just other things going on in their lives and their job's not a focal point for them. And they may choose, so those people don't leave. And people who are motivated, who want to move ahead, they will leave a company, which ultimately leaves behind the less good, shall we say. Mm. So if you are working for a company which isn't the most exciting, the most stimulating, is not pushing the bleeding edge, they're sweating the assets and you're working on 10-year-old routers and, 15-year-old switches, which isn't uncommon in networking, quite honestly. Anybody who's got an ounce of talent would have walked out the door. And my advice to you is, so should you. You should be. secondly, as Ethan pointed out, ego is a problem here. Don't be that guy. Don't be that person who thinks you're so smart and become angry and frustrated. Just make the most of the situation that you're in. And remember that there are actually only a few relatively smart people in the world, and you're probably not one of them.
For some definition of smart, yes.
Yes. At any given point in time, you may or may not be smart. Like smart sometimes is a temporal thing. I knew a lot more about the technology of networking when I passed my CCIE exam many, many years ago. These days, I could go and look it up and become smarter. So smart is a variable definition. I do think mostly, though, IT organizations tend to accrue second-rate people over time, mainly because the good people leave. Because they've got choices. So make sure you're one of the good people and exercise your choice to move on.
And that's it. Exercise your choice. Yeah, you have to do that. Yeah. All right. So Mike asked, if you were a middle-level operator, what conferences and mailing lists would you be participating in for long-term career prospects? This is a weird one because, I don't know, I'm kind of down on conferences. I mean, they still see value of in them if you have very specific business things you're trying to achieve. You want to go to a conference and it's because your company is in the business of completely rethinking how they do security. And so you want to go to a security conference, talk to a lot of vendors, hear some talks, and then, reboot the way that you do your security, or you're going to redo your switching infrastructure, et cetera. You get the idea. And so you're going to that conference with a purpose of investigating and finding at that conference, a solution that your business needs. Yeah, but on the whole, if you don't go with that goal and you just think that, the conference is going to make me amazing and smarter and so on, yeah, probably not. You can find a lot of that stuff online. And so that's one thing. Another thing, mailing lists are, again, what's your goal for participating in the mailing lists? You're talking about long-term career prospects. Well, are you trying to absorb information? Are you trying to participate in a group of people who you can engage and interact with and then impress them, and somehow that's going to further your career. And so if we assume here that your goal is you want to work on progressively larger networks, that's a definition of a long-term careers prospect. You want to work on progressively bigger networks and you want to have increasing responsibility levels. Okay, well, you got to learn the kinds of issues that those sorts of folks deal with, particularly if you're at, again, we're making some assumptions here, maybe a smaller network now, or you're only seeing one piece of a large network because you have a very narrowly defined role. Okay, one group that would be worth participating in would be NANOG, if you're in North American Network Operators Group. These are large networks. These are folks that are very often service providers that have big kinds of problems and talk about big kinds of problems that they face and how they're solving them. So that's an interesting one that tends to be independent. There may be some vendor involvement, but it's not a vendor-driven organization. It's operator driven as far as the content goes. And Nanog is one of those. I've watched several presentations online, have been meaning to get to one, haven't yet, but hear nothing but good things from everybody. And several people have asked me, hey, when are you going to get to a Nanog? So it's on my list. And again, I'm espousing that one because it is not a vendor-specific event like Cisco Live is or like HPE Discover is, et cetera. It's vendor-neutral and operator-driven, and I think you get a broader perspective that way. Another group that I recommend is neither a conference nor a mailing list, but is certainly in that family, and that's the Network to Code Slack group. So Slack is the way many of us are communicating now. It's sort of like modernized IRC. And if you Google Network to Code Slack group, you'll find there's a Heroku app sign-up page. You can get into that. There's over 2,000 people involved with it right now and dozens of channels for people that are interested in network programmability and all the various tooling that you can use around that and how to do programming and automation and scripting and lots of other things that are around that. Now, I would promote that one. Because if it's a long-term career prospect, well, the long-term is learning how to do to deal with the network in a programmatic way. I was going to say programming the network, and that's not actually what I mean. I mean dealing, interfacing with the network and with something other than the CLI. So that's a powerful group of people that have been collected there, and it's fairly active. So
I think you need to understand that long-term career prospects are about two things. One is knowing what you don't know, and finding out that you don't know what you don't know. Right?
That's so, sitting in your happy bubble of ignorance.
That's exactly right. So there are things that you know you don't know, and you can work to learn those, and participating in, you know, Nanogs or networked codes or local network operator groups or whatever. My suggestion is to get onto Eventbrite and look for local meetups and start attending those. A couple of reasons. One is, you know, talking to other people can help pave the way to more interesting jobs. So you can meet people at these meetups and maybe they'll want to recruit you or hire you, or they'll know somebody or have heard of somebody, and suddenly you can be involved in something interesting or even maybe a community effort which stretches your skills. And
case
over
in
time,
point, Greg, just let me underscore that NOG with a shameless plug for one of the NOGs I'm involved with, which is BosNOG. I live in New Hampshire, and in Boston, there is a network operators group that's been running for about a year and a half now. And we're collecting more and more people. Each event seems to get a little larger. And as far as the job thing, yeah, there's vendors, local vendors from the area that attend these NOGs as well, not just network operators and engineers, but also vendors from like Cisco and Juniper and Big Switch Plexi have all showed up at BosNOG as well. So you can really hobnob with people that are not just operating stuff, but are making stuff. And and it's a great community you can be a part of and really open things up for you, broaden your horizons.
Yeah, so get along, meet people. And the second thing is it'll build your support network. So if you plan to live in a specific area for an extended period of time, and you know, maybe not everybody does, but some people do. Some people live in the same town all their lives. Hasn't happened to me yet, but you know, good enough. So you can actually build up a support network of people that you can go and ask for help, right? So go to meetups, get involved in various things. As Ethan already said, there are a number of Slack groups. If you don't, you know, Packet Pushers has one. Mm-hmm. If you want to jump in there and participate, we have a bunch of people. We usually have, it's not overly busy, but we can make chat rooms on different topics if that's what you want. People ask questions and, you know, there's an awful lot of whining and bitching about vendors, but hey, they kind of deserve it. But if you're in a Slack group, you know, don't sit back. Make sure you participate. Ask questions. But it is good mental hygiene not to expect an answer every time, right? So just because you ask a question doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get an answer. Maybe people are busy or people are spread across different time zones. Obviously, podcasts are a good way to get long-term career prospects. I talk about audio enhancement or audio professional development, listening to podcasts like the Packet Pushers, like this, which you've obviously got the hook of. There's dozens of others. There's lots of other people setting up podcasts. Not everybody's managed to make a podcast long as we have and to produce as much content, but that doesn't mean that not listening to them is not valuable. You also talked about conferences. Just my take on conferences, like Ethan, you know, we've been incredibly privileged to go to all sorts of conferences with all sorts of vendors. I think that the lessons that I've learned is probably there's three things here. One is vendor-specific conferences are like going to a church. Everybody believes in the same thing, and there's a complete lack of fresh ideas or discussion about those things, right?
And in fact, fresh ideas could be viewed as heresy. So, yeah.
So, be very careful. Vendor-specific conferences, on the other hand, you know, they're very well run. They're very well funded. They're very well structured. There's a phenomenal amount of data around what the vendor products, provided you are interested in those vendor products, right? But the downside of vendor conferences is that, you know, you never see anything upsetting. Everything's on message and on brand. There's very little challenge, right? So there's nothing to take you out of your comfort zone, because that might slow down your purchase orders. Now, if you are well progressed in your career, you might find that you won't learn much. So, for example, in the last 10 to 15 years, I've been going to various Cisco Live events, and some of those sessions actually are unchanged in a decade, like the ones around BGP, for example, which hasn't substantially changed in 20 or 30 years. So if you have advanced your career to some point, you might find that there's not a whole lot new to learn in a vendor conference, if that's where you are. The flip side of this is if you go to an independent conference, like the conference that we're involved with, which is Interop ITX, you should totally come along, get our code, and sign up, and you'll get a big discount. I think it's Packet Pushers is the code.
It is. Yep.
It is.
20%. It's 20 or 25%. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're involved with that because it's an independent conference. It's not vendor specific. And when those conferences are good, they're just brilliant, right? So you can learn a whole lot. The content is just totally off the wall. You'll be taken into to the land of you don't know what you don't know. Watch people stand up and start talking about stuff and just go like, I didn't even know this was a thing. And of course, venues are expensive, so these conferences are still expensive. One of the challenges is that quite often these independent conferences, the content is hard to vet. So the content tends to be a little bit up and down. You can have somebody up on stage, you can be blowing your mind, and the next one you walk into, somebody can get up and drone on for the better part of 60 minutes, and you could just be wishing to like super glue your eyeballs together sort of thing. Yeah. So track organizers do their very best. And that sort of thing. The other thing, and this is more of a general issue, is one thing is people can reduce the cost of going to conferences. Make it so that your executive team, not only do they have to pay for the conference, but they've also got to pay for your flights and for your accommodation. Now, you can't do much to reduce the conference except to get in early, hard sometimes, but make it so that you're not a key person in an organization. So don't be that guy who can't leave because things will break. Plan your career or plan your work or plan your team so that you can walk out the door at any time and away you go, right? And the first thing is getting out the door. You need to organize it with the way you work to say you don't have to be there every hour of the day to make something happen. Think about using lower cost accommodation to reduce the overall cost. So I know a lot of companies will tend to book, you know, some fancy schmancy Hilton or blah, blah, blah type hotel because that's the corporate blah, blah. But you'll actually find it's cheaper to do things. And there are ways to travel cheaper as well. So for some organizations, do think about being proactive and go to the boss and say, look, I can cut 20, 30% off the whole deal here by doing these things and see if it goes with it. Hmm. So best I can come up with.
Jap asked the following, and Jap is active in our Packet Pushers IRC channel, which is up on freenode.net. If you hashtag Packet Pushers is that channel. If you're interested in hanging out, there's usually about 150 folks in there at any given time from all around the world, and pretty constant network discussion and also other things interesting to nerds. Anyway, he asks, how do I sell conference visits to my boss at a systems integration professional services company? I want to visit Interop someday to get a feel of direction for my career, get motivated to learn more technologies and meet people. The personal benefits are obvious, and if I become a better engineer, that will benefit my employer too. But I find it tough to make a direct translation of my personal development to short-term benefits for my company. Greg, you had a – why don't you just keep going, because this really builds on the last question, and you got some thoughts here.
Yeah. So, you know, again, the vendor and conferences have limits. They're sales tools, right? Their goal exists to sell products, right? So if you want to know more about that tech from a vendor, go to vendor conferences. If you want to know what's up for sale today, go to a vendor conference. If you want run new ideas on how to run your network or to look at your life or something like that, go to an independent event. If you want to actually understand what the future looks like and not what the vendor's future, carefully managed and controlled and selected for maximum profit for them, then you know, go to a vendor conference, but really if you want new ideas or fresh ideas, go to independent events. Now, the big thing here is that if you can't get to a conference, you can certainly start doing virtual events. We're seeing a lot of virtual events start to take off. Now, obviously, a podcast is a kind of a virtual event. You're listening to this. But what about taking time off to watch Tech Field Day vendor presentations? Literally, you can sit in on those webinars. Well, they're not webinars. They're virtual events. And actually sit through the sessions and get as if you're sitting in the audience for Tech Field Day and participate. Like, take the time off. Take the day off and go and sit down in front of the Tech Field Day stream and participate. You can throw questions at the people who are there at Tech Field Day. They'll take your questions and ask them for you. You can send them in over Twitter. It could be like you're actually there in the room with those people, right?
Yeah, that happens. I mean, Greg and I have both been Tech Field Day delegates. We, all of us that are delegates around the table, monitor Twitter and the hashtag for the Tech Field Day event. And when we see questions come in from the audience, if you will, people that are watching the live stream, we relay those questions into the room and they get answered in real time right there. So it is, and that, again, it maybe if you're in a tough time zone, it's tough to deal with the live stream, depending on, you know, so often the events are held on the West Coast. And if you're in Europe, that can be tough. But
Schedule 2 hours every morning. When you get to work, the first thing you do is watch 2 hours of Tech Field Day presentations.
And then even if you can't do the live stream, you follow up with what's on YouTube or Vimeo later and just watch them all, because there's so much you can learn, and they're aimed at engineering kind of people, not marketing or C-level kind of people. So you as an engineer get to drink in what's really happening with these products at that fundamental nerd level, so you know how it's going to work for your business or not, and get some tough questions answered there for you. The people in the room are there thinking like you think and trying to ask those sorts of questions. So you really get a big benefit out of it. Hmm. So again,
now vendor webinars are good. Well, actually, they're not very good. Most of
them. Really depends, right? You know, some of them are great and some of them are just, you know, glossy. And
they're awesome. You know, the ones that you and I do, they're just fantastic.
Well, you're saying that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but the joke is we work really hard with the vendors when they ask us to participate in a webinar to make it, you know, aimed at bringing educational and quality content through that webinar, not just a sales pitch, but also so you learn something along the way, so that there's value that are brought there. So we do our best, but it's still the vendor's event and we're the guests, so there's only so much we can do.
Yeah. So, you know, there are things, you know, tune into vendor webinars. Maybe what you need to do is schedule some time in your workday to actually watch them. Maybe, you know, start lunch at 12 and finish at 2, eat lunch at your desk and watch 2 hours of these things. And you can actually get a hell of a lot. Although Tech Field Day is very much a vendor conference, there's actually a lot of useful information in there. And, you know, of course, the other thing is blog. At the risk, there's every chance that if you post blog posts and tell people about what you're thinking, there's every chance that the vendors will actually invite you as an influencer. You know, if you start getting well known for commentary and stuff, you might get an invitation to Tech Field Day or other influencer events, and then your boss doesn't have to pay for them at all.
So, Jack, maybe this is a weird way to answer the question, because we're kind of resigning ourselves to the fact that it's really hard to pitch a conference to your boss and get them to pay for it necessarily. But there's so many other resources available that maybe it doesn't matter. I think that's the point that we're trying to make here. Because I've had the same thing. I used to work for a company that was a heavy Cisco shop. I was a CCIE working for them at the time, wanted to go to Cisco Live. And it's like, guys, we're getting ready to do a big data center refresh. I want to go to Cisco Live, sit in sessions, talk to some engineers at Cisco, and make sure we're making the smart decisions for the right reasons. Nope, couldn't get it funded. And I had every reason in the world to go. I made the case. I demonstrated this is an educational event, and they still told me no. They just sometimes you can't win that battle, even when you have all the right reasons to be going. It can be tough. So,
and if they don't want to pay for you to go to a conference, there's two possible reasons here. One is you're not that good. Let's face it, right? If your employer doesn't want to encourage you to be awesome and to help you to be awesome to help themselves, then maybe you're actually not as good as you think you are. So check your ego at the door and have a good hard chat to yourself.
That's tough love, buddy. That is tough right there.
I know. But the other flip side of it is maybe your employer is just not somebody that you should be at. And once again, start asking if it's not you, then it's them, and start looking for another job.
We are going to take a quick break from our main discussion because we want to let you know about the conference the Packet Pushers are going to be at in May 2017. That is Interop ITX, and they are a sponsor of today's show.
InterrupITX, this is where tech pros go to get objective, full-stack IT education. InterrupITX takes place May 15th through 19th, 2017 at the MGM in Las Vegas. So join Greg Farrell and me, that Ethan Banks, for the Future of Networking Summit. We're excited about this because this is our gig. This is a two-day session where we are going to take a deep dive into next-generation developments in the wide area, in the data center. We're going to look at network operations. We're going to talk about things like software-defined security. Any of the cool stuff that we think is going to really matter in the next 1, 5, 10 years, we are going to talk about. Greg and I will be speaking. Drew is going to be speaking, and we're going to have some special guests that we are bringing in to talk about the future of networking. That's the point of this summit. It's a really big deal. Register for InterrupITX and you can attend our summit and then other hands-on workshops like the Future of Data, the Container Crash Course, Dark Reading Cybersecurity Summit, and the Open Source IT Summit. The event's conference tracks focus on security, DevOps, cloud, infrastructure, data and analytics, all the technologies that you need for a successful full-stack IT strategy. So you got the conference summits, you've got the workshops, and then you've got the conference tracks that you can attend as well. Basically, you can mainline a lot of information from the industry during the InterrupITX conference. Okay, so if you're looking to accelerate your career, there's also plenty of sessions on leadership and professional development. So not just the techie stuff, but that practical business stuff as well. And then if you want to see what's going on in the industry, you can check out over 100 vendors at InterrupITX's Business Hall, and you're going to have an opportunity there to check out what's leading and then what's emerging as you look at all the tech vendors that are there and see what they have to offer. So join us, the Packet Pushers, at InterrupITX this coming May. Use promo code Packet Pushers when you register and you will receive a 20% discount. We definitely want to see you in Vegas. We do our very best to hang out with as many people as we can, chat, and just see what's going on in the real world. So go to InterrupITX and reserve your spot today. One more time, promo code Packet Pushers gets you a 20% discount. All right, Garrett Lair asks the following. In Europe, especially mainland Europe, Germany, the Netherlands, France, etc., our economic success is very much based on mid-sized corporations. In Germany, 34% of revenues, 43% of investments stem from corporations with less than 250 employees. Okay, so we're setting the stage for, you know, smaller shops here. For these corporations, Garrett asks, the digital transformation appears particularly challenging due to the lack of specialized workers and skills in IT and vendor solutions, coming usually from large enterprise-focused U.S. corporations. They appear to be rarely feasible in these environments. For example, despite Cisco's claim, ACI does not seem to be a viable solution in environments serving less than 1,000 VMs. Alike, these corporations rarely have the ability to run cloud-native platforms on Docker, Kubernetes. In fact, they struggle to keep a simple VMware cluster alive and healthy. So here's his question, Garrett's question. What's your take on the journey to digital transformation? And he defines that as third platform, augmented products, agile development, Internet of Things, etc., and the answers established vendors have to offer for these corporations. So what's our take on that? So, okay. Oh, man, there's a lot here. So first of all, defining digital transformation, if we define that as, I'm going to kind of, you know, tweak Garrett's definition here a little bit and say, if we define that as using data from your infrastructure to make business decisions, and I think that's what augmented reality and Internet of Things all feed into, data, I think Agile's kind of not necessarily a part of that. It's more, I mean, that's more about bringing products to market more quickly. And I guess that could fall into the digital transformation umbrella, but really with a very different focus. So I think I disagree that it's about specialized skills necessarily. Tech companies aren't exclusively making new products for the digital transformation segment, like it's some brand new thing with all this brand new tech. I mean, there is some of that, but a lot of this is just rebranding. It's just marketing stuff, a new shiny marketing banner. Ooh, we can sell things and call it digital transformation. Woo! I think it's an overblown marketing term used to make businesses feel like they're falling behind and they got to buy something to keep up. So reality to me, there are products of all sizes and pricing tiers that can help with the data mining, if we're assuming that data mining is a big part of digital transformation, and that they can be industry-specific things. So you got companies like DeepField and Kentik, both past Packet Pusher sponsors. They do data mining aimed at networking. ExtraHop, they came on the show recently as a sponsor. They mine data from the network and map it to business problems. You know, they talked a bit about some of the healthcare apps they've built by mining healthcare data as it flows across hospital networks and so on. Cisco, they focused on the very high end of the market with Tetration, although if you watch Cisco over the years, historically, they'll come out guns blazing with some huge product and then make a smaller version of that product aimed at the mid-market over time. Mm. And again, all of this is to the point that I don't know that it's about specialized skills and that, you know, the mid-market can't take advantage of these quote-unquote digital transformation kind of things. Again, the truly new ideas being tried under the heading of digital transformation are nascent and unproven. And so it's not like anybody's really got, you know, a corner on, you know, the skills here. You know, large customers are going to try them out. Their input helps the product be perfected. And then when there's confidence that that offering is solid, like Tetration, it's going to get bundled and trickle down to the mid-market in canned offerings that they can sell as a bundle or an add-on to a different service. Well, and that we're already seeing that happen with Tetration. There's already a smaller version that you can buy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And in the old days, like once upon a time in enterprise IT, everything started in the small market and bubbled up to the top. And so the small market was actually the beta site for all of these vendors. And the massive transition now is with the way that public cloud has gone and the way the big companies have gone is that now it's possible to start at the top and come down. So once upon a time, Cisco would have developed a small switch and then developed a medium-sized switch and then developed a big switch. Cisco now has this desperate need to stay in profit. So it's delivering the big stuff first and trying to sell everybody up. So I see Tetration as a step to upsell everybody to the maximum dollar value before you introduce the cheaper product and pick up the customers who are resistant to buying it. That's just a decision. That's just one way how you approach the market. And that's a lot of vendors are doing the same thing. They're focusing on their high value, high profit margin markets like service providers right now because service providers haven't said anything. I think the transition here is that the mid-market of enterprise IT is absolutely primed to move to software as a service. And what I mean by that is the mid-market, once upon a time, had an accounting system and a HR system and a Salesforce management system and, you know, any number email systems and all that. Now what we're seeing is Salesforce takes care of sales automation. Email from the mid-market is moving out to Microsoft Azure if they haven't gone to Google Mail, and so on and so forth. And these people, the way that enterprise IT technology is put together is it's just not simple enough to use or to operate. It's not reliable enough in the mid-market for you to say, you know, if somebody comes up to you in the mid-market and says Salesforce automation, yep, we can just run it over here on a web browser. They go like, you bet, I just want to get rid of that stuff. Because the current stuff they've got is crap. It's hard to use. It's hard to operate. It's expensive. It's got vast licenses. I can just go and give it away to Salesforce and like, boom. And I think we're going to see a lot of mid-market of enterprise IT not move to the cloud per se in that you're not moving your existing stuff into the cloud. You're just going to move to SaaS where the software is hosted by somebody on someone else's computer.
Well, yeah, and obviously we're already seeing that. I mean, that's a big thing that's happening. So
yeah, well, enterprise IT is shrinking, you know, across the board. Enterprise IT is up and down, but across the board, it's shrinking roughly 0 to 5% every quarter, depending on who you talk to, right? And that's partly because things are moving to the cloud. It's partly because of price shrinkage. So the natural, you know, the crunch down of technology, it gets cheaper over time. But it's also because enterprise IT has actually got everything that it needs. It doesn't actually have a passionate need to race out and buy a new word processor or, you know, installing Windows 10 doesn't actually transform your business the same way that installing Windows 95 or, you know, Windows XP did back in the day. Like Windows XP transformed your business because it actually gave you a reliable operating system. Windows 95 was valuable because it gave you a productivity boost, right? Anyway, that's a different story. So the flip side here is you've also got to be questioning whether you want to work for a small company or a big company, because working for the mid-market means you actually get to do lots of fun things. And I spent, you know, nearly 15 years working in the mid-market, and I worked on everything, printers, servers, operating systems, telephone systems, you know. And the interesting thing is that at a later stage where I advanced in my career, I was often the only person in the room who had a sort of a 360-degree view of what was connected to the network. And so I'm a big fan of working in the mid-market. You can work on storage arrays and, you know, servers and virtualization, and nobody's going to question you. Whereas if you go to work with a big company, you end up to be a bit more specialized. You might end up being the virtualization person or the networking person, and your chances to work on storage arrays become like zero.
And in that big company, you're also likely to be in a hierarchy where people higher up the food chain can just tell you to shut up, as opposed to what you were just saying, Craig, where the mid-market, no one's going to question you very likely because you're the big fish in the small pond and get your fingers in everything, which can be an awful lot of fun.
That's right. The challenge, of course, is that you've got poor access to resources and you may not have the time and resources to do really smart, really clever things. And, you know, it's a trade-off, but you can learn a hell of a lot in the mid-market. So it's two sides of the same coin. I agree that, my overall thing is that a lot of that mid-market enterprise IT is going to disappear over the next 10 to 20 years. And,
So, Garrett, there's a couple of different perspectives on your question there. I hope that was helpful. Anthony asks the following. How do you, Packet Pushers hosts, Greg and me and so on, try to stay relevant experience-wise? What kind of consulting opportunities do you take? How often do you find your hands-on knowledge slipping a bit, being mostly hands-off these days? Go for it, Greg.
Okay. So how many times have we said, learn your fundamentals? Like, is that like a song or something? Is that just like a motto? One of the things is that I spent a lot of time in my early years working on fundamentals. So understanding things like silicon and CPUs and memories and operating systems, the difference between packets and frames, between routing and switching, between protocols and apps and, you know, all that stuff. And once you know those fundamentals, you'll quickly realize that actually nothing much has changed in IT in the last 30 years. That, you know, the bulk corpus of operating system of Windows and Linux is fundamentally unchanged in 20 plus years. So focus your efforts on learning fundamentals as you're coming up through the stack, right? So then think about there's a massive difference between your approach to working when you say, can configure vendor command line because wasting hundreds of hours configuring vendor command line, to why am I using this technology? How does it work now? How does the vendor implement this? So when you go to learn how to do IPsec VPNs, go and learn IPsec. Read a textbook, sign up for, you know, IT Pro TV or Safari, O'Reilly or whatever, and read textbooks about IPsec. And then take that fundamental knowledge and go, how does Cisco ASA implement this? How does Cisco's firewall, what's it called?
Firepower.
Source Firepower firewall implement IPsec. How does Juniper's SRX implement IPsec? How does OpenVPN? And you know what? All of them implement the same IPsec a little bit differently, but if you've got a good grip on how IPsec works, it doesn't actually matter where you're going. You'll be able to translate that experience into thing. So, finally, at a more practical level, at Packet Pushers, we talk to vendors all the time. You know, we're pretty lucky. We get briefings. We know people. We can ring them up and ask them questions about, you know, what the hell is this and why. We also have the Slack group that we participate in, and we watch conversations going on with other people. We're in IRC talking to people. I spend time on Reddit, and when I see something on Reddit, I go off and chase it down and think about it from the point of view of the person asking for the call. And I also spend a lot of time reading research papers and vendor press releases and then chasing down new technology. So, sure, when Brocade released ODL, I spent several days reading up on ODL and reading manuals and trying to get a lab stood up and playing with it and realizing that it was actually quite difficult and, you know, so all that sort of stuff. So really, hands off, I've never regarded being hands on as relevant. It's certainly relevant in terms of locking the knowledge into your head, but it's not a must have. I still understand a lot of details around IPsec, and the rest I can get from Google, I think. What about you, Ethan?
I'm going to echo a lot of the same things that you said. I mean, so Anthony, if you mean by staying relevant that, whether or not we remember what commands to type into the CLI, I'm not working on what commands I type into the CLI at this point. I've gone all the way through CCIE stuff. I used to be able to type things super fast, but at this point I can look that up if I need to configure something.
That's not a skill anymore.
I not only with Cisco that I was able to be really good at that, but I had a solid handle on Junos. I was really good with F5 TMSH environments for command line stuff, and they are what they are. And as Greg says, it's not a skill anymore. I mean, even so, that said, I haven't given up on that stuff completely. I do model stuff in like GNS3 or Cisco Viral. Now and again, I can stand up VMs of these things that I want to work on, try them out. Although, to be honest, I spend more time with Linux these days because that seems to be where things are headed on many fronts in the long term for networking as well as other parts of the IT stack. And I think APIs are the interface of the future that are worth caring about. So I'm much more interested in trying to figure out those sorts of things than CLI. Mm. So again, if that's what you mean by, staying relevant, being able to bang things out into a CLI really fast, kind of shrugging my shoulders about the relative importance of that, especially as the market changes. Mm. Now, if you're talking about problems, Anthony, you know, emerging techniques, design challenges in the industry, and keeping up with those sorts of things. I read heavily. I read 2 to 3 hours a day. I follow dozens of vendor blogs. I follow about 100 practitioner blogs. I read technical books cover to cover, at least a few per year. I read product data sheets and white papers. I read design guides from vendors, all the stuff Greg was saying, you know, that I do all of the same kind of stuff. I am writing bits of a book right now. I'm working on a book with Russ White. Now, Russ is a very prolific writer, and he, by the time this book is done, he will have probably written 80% and me 20% if I'm lucky, just because he cranks out words so much faster than I seem to be able to do. But every chapter that I've written so far requires a lot of research, so I have to get right down in the weeds, make sure I understand what's true and what's false so that it's going to stand up to technical peer review before the book is published, and so on. That's a big deal. You know, you want to keep up with something and know it intimately, write a book, you know, or even write a blog post. It's the same kind of thing. Yeah. And then just, Greg, just to follow up on what you were saying, at Packet Pushers, we're interviewing hundreds of people in the course of a year about their products and their problems and the solutions, the techniques. Mm-hmm. And we also attend conferences. We mentioned earlier in the show, we hear sessions presented about what's happening right now, solid information coming from smart people, and we're absorbing, you know, all of that. We just don't sit there and drone off. We
spend hours prepping. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As far as the consulting thing goes, I'm not consulting at the moment. I have consulted. I probably will again if an interesting project comes along and someone wants me to work on that with them as like an architect or a designer to help them make decisions and so on. But to be honest, consulting is distracting and really stressful because Packet Pushers is a full-time business that takes up all of my energy. It's not just you guys hear us talk on a podcast and think that's all we do and it's easy. Oh, those of you listening, this is a full-time business and it is a very big deal. We have, there's four of us that work full-time. We have contractors now, and we're working with other people to bring more content to you and working on a premium content channel. And, you know, I've got 20 years of hands-on experience in a variety of environments, doing a lot of skills and many, many, many certifications behind me. And as Greg said, honestly, IT does not change that quickly. Even when it's different, it's the friggin' same. Honestly, it's just, that's the reality of it. And it's actually at the core of the book Russ and I are writing, that idea that even though it's different, it's the same, you know, very much so. Here's the funny part.
It doesn't
change.
I mean, look, even things like ECMP, like leaf spine architectures in the data center, you know, that's a big, massive transition from, you know, tree networks, you know, the core distribution access networks that we have. But as soon as you understand that you're just routing, you know, packets or switching frames, and you're doing it this way, and you're doing equal cost path routing and blah, 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 it's like, okay, fine, move on.
Yeah, exactly. So, Anthony, one last point.
The transition to APIs is much more earth-shattering.
Oh, yeah. Really. Yeah, yeah. All right, Anthony, last point I'll make here. Having said all of these things, the funny part about this question to me is we keep talking about things on the show and covering topics that some listeners say isn't practical because honestly, they're too forward-thinking for some people that are in this audience. So, in other words, we actually are predictive in the subjects we choose to cover. We're trying to stay ahead of the curve, so I don't feel like I'm behind. I feel like I'm, in a certain sense, very much ahead, trying to keep up with all the emerging stuff and the new stuff and where things are going, as opposed to staying mired in where things have been. So that's, you know, a really different take on it. But we get asked that question a lot.
Yeah, and keep in mind that sometimes by the time a technology has matured, we've been pushing away at it for, I don't know, a year or two. Like, we've been talking about SDN as early as 2011. So May 2011. So by the time you get to 2017, we've been talking about it for 6 years. We're not behind the curve. Sometimes we're right on it or ahead of it even, perhaps.
Well, let's move into a new category of questions, Mr. Farrow, and that are some career questions that came through. Here's a question from Nate. Nate asked the following: what are some of your biggest career regrets and successes? So successes, I don't want to talk about too much. It's kind of like, you know, yeah, I've had some projects that went well. I got some certifications behind me and so on, whatever. You know, a lot of people that, you know, dig deep have those sorts of stories. But regrets, I have something that that I'll talk about for a minute here. And that is just not taking as much time and, you know, and making as important people as I should have. So just park here for a minute. In my career, I have some regrets about moving on from companies and not keeping up with the people that I'd established working relationships with and friendships with and so on. Now, part of that's just natural. When you work in an environment where you have to go to the office every day, there are people sitting across the cubicle from you. There are people you work on projects with. You have some time in the trenches together, especially in IT, where there's that day that everybody came together because the system was down and nobody knew why. And everyone was heads down, trying to figure it out, working hard, trying to get the business back online. And there's something about that crucible of downtime where if everyone's cool and works together, as opposed to, you know, yelling and screaming and being obnoxious, that can really be a bonding time, and you develop friendships based on that. And then there's just the timeless, you know, the water cooler time, and you go into the cafe downstairs and sitting over a cup of coffee and, you know, banging your head out on a project, or, you know, that whiteboard time where all of these things can bring people together. There's a real human aspect to work that, you know, my regrets are just not valuing those relationships enough and not investing time afterwards and trying to keep up some of those relationships. Some of that's just been practical, and some of that's been, I moved on. I'm leaving that place and I'm going on to the next thing. Roar! And, you know, me, really focused on myself and trying to pump up my career. So that's one thing I would say, you know, value the people that you work with, put time into them. You know, find someone you can mentor. If you have people that you appreciate, let them know that you appreciate them. Take the time to say something nice to somebody that's there that isn't necessarily about work, you know? People are valuable. People matter. And spend the time, spend your time, you know, investing in other people, as opposed to being all about yourself all the time, which I see. I know some really career-minded people are just all about themselves and pushing themselves ahead at the expense of others, to some degree. So, yeah. Greg, regrets or successes you wanted to talk about?
Successes, well, you know, who cares? Your successes are your successes. And I've had several of them over the years, things that I've done and projects that I've completed. But the amazing thing about successes in enterprise IT infrastructure is they last about 3 years before they turn into a turd.
Oh, that is so sadly true. Right? Yep. Oh boy.
I remember at one company I built this amazing firewall infrastructure. I cut the butt. I did it for 70% less than the original quote from somebody else, and, you know, blah blah blah, and built this and got it done, and, you know, deployed it, and I was pretty smug and walked off, and within 2 years they'd completely messed it up because from what I heard from people they said, you know, they just couldn't. Nobody knew how to run it, and I'd left an entire. I'd written a 250-page manual on how to operate this infrastructure, and nobody ever read the manual after I left. You know, I thought, anyway, whatever. It was what it was. I think regrets. Let's not focus on successes, because everybody's successes are personal. So the things that I regret is that I let employers screw me over. I have always been an overachiever. I tried to do more than I was asked. I tried to be the best or the smartest or to do more work than somebody else or to take on the toughest tasks. And over the years, that's just let employers take whatever I had to give, specifically the managers who managed me, who took advantage of my work to benefit themselves. And looking back, that was a serious regret. Why, you know, they got something out of, and the credit, and in fact, a lot of them got the money associated. They said that they, you know, they ran their team. The team ran well because of their hard work. And in fact, you know, that was a thing. Another thing that I've learned over the years, and you will have seen this coming through in the work we do at Packet Pushers, is that vendor loyalty has never paid off for me. So being loyal to any one of the vendors over the last 25 years in networking has never actually paid off. The vendors have never supported me. When push came to shove, the people inside of the vendors instantly stabbed you in the back or cut your legs off or did something that resulted in severe personal distress or financial loss, a substantial financial loss in my case, very substantial financial loss over the years. So my sense of vendor loyalty is that it's worthless, and that in fact, if you actually do it, you will just be exploited. So regrets, believing that vendor loyalty would pay off, and it never did, and that employers would give me something back if I committed to them, which that never happened in my life. So, but the final regret on a personal level is one that you alluded to, Ethan, which is I never got to mentor or help other people in networking. And, you know, when I first started out, I was quite an idiot, you know, like a good young over, you know, And I was foolish and crazy. And there were a number of people who I worked with who just helped me to be, you know, slow down, think about what you're doing, don't act like that. You know, you need to control your mouth. You need to, you know, all those things. And that just, and I regret that I never got to help other people. And you know what? That actually, that regret actually turned into this. So ultimately, the fact that I never got to mentor or support other people was ultimately what led me into blogging and podcasting with you.
That's, very, very much that. My blogging started as a study blog for me, that then picking up all the interaction with folks online turned into that exact kind of mentoring. Well, okay, this is our first AMA show, Ask Us Anything, and we've got more questions that we're going to do in another show, but we are going to cap this show here, and you all know this, but we're the Packet Pushers, packetpushers.net, at Packet Pushers on Twitter. I'm Ethan, at EC Banks. Greg is at Ethereal Mind. That's, we're most active on Twitter, and you can find us on LinkedIn and so on. If you want to send us questions because you like these sorts of shows, go to packetpushers.net, look for the AMA link, fill out the form, and as we get questions in, we will do more. And we do have more questions. We're actually going to stop this show, but keep recording, and you're going to hear more questions coming up in a future episode.